Hi, I'm Dr. Henry Black. I'm an adjunct professor of medicine at the New York University Langone School of Medicine, and I'm here today with my friend and colleague, Dr. George Lundberg. George?
Hi, Henry. Happy to be with you today. I'm Dr. George Lundberg. I'm consulting professor in a couple of departments at Stanford. I'm editor-at-large at Medscape after having been the editor-in-chief there for 10 prior years. And my main job is as chief medical officer of a company in San Francisco named Collabrex. But I'm happy to have a chat with you today about this interesting topic of medical news and how to handle it.
Right. And one of the things that really stimulated me, other than my interest in what patients are hearing or seeing, was an article in the British Medical Journal recently that looked at data from Dr. Oz's show and from something called The Doctors. And they did a very nice study, I think, to try to see how accurate their reporting was, whether they discussed conflict of interest at all, and many, many other things. And this was somewhat disturbing. It seemed from their conclusions that maybe a third to a half of what was discussed on these programs and what was recommended was actually had any backup at all scientifically. Have you had a chance to look at that, or what do you think about what they said?
Well, I saw it, and I saw all the media publicity about it. Frankly, I was a little surprised that they got as much right as they did. I figured that a lot of the television medical news is really entertainment. It's not intended to be medical news. It's intended to generate ad sales, either directly or indirectly, generate readership. That's what it's all about. It's entertainment more than it is news. In shows like that, I think the Oz thing, as you say, maybe Oz got half of it right. I was surprised it was that good. The doctors seemed to do a little bit better. But the big thing that surprised me about that particular study is that those are American shows, and it was published in the British Medical Journal. Why wasn't that in New England or in JAMA or Annals or one of those properties, since this is an American problem in particular?
It seemed to be this was broadcast internationally, too. So it must be a problem in other countries as well. But I don't know if that's the case.
Well, you have to go country to country and check on it, which I haven't done. Although back when we used to publish JAMA in so many other languages and cultures, we did look at what the news media were doing in those various places. And it's extremely variable. The level of science coverage is highly variable. The level of ethics that's involved in it, the extent to which advertising is sold against the content of particular articles varies enormously from culture to culture. The BBC out of the UK, I thought, generally did a good job. In the print media, I think something like The Guardian does a really good job in terms of honest, direct reporting on things. But you want to talk about TV, and that's the worst, although radio's not much better. But the print media aren't blameless either.
Well, Dr. Oz apparently gets 2.9 million viewers per show, and The Doctor's about 2.3 million per show, which is an enormous audience. And how much of that is reviewed by experts? How much of the doctors themselves, Dr. Oz and those on The Doctor's, are they qualified to discuss things like that?
Well, I don't have any way to know that. The problem is separating the role of a physician who is bound by the ethics of the medical profession to be honest and trustworthy and first do no harm, and the media personality, which if somebody wants to be a media personality or an opera star or the first violinist for the Chicago Symphony, and it also happened to be a doctor, I think that's fine. You can separate what they're doing in their performing role from what they would be doing if they were performing as a physician. But in the two shows that you referred to, one is called Dr. Oz, and the other is The Doctors, and they capitalize on the fact that these are, I gather, actual physicians, sometimes prominent physicians. By so doing, they have a panache and a credibility put onto them by the fact that they are physicians, presumably licensed physicians in particular areas, and that means people ought to listen to them. And then when you mix that up with hype and entertainment and promotion of products that seem to have little or no backing in legitimate science or in medical literature, I have a real ethical problem with that. And I have a problem with the profession of medicine not trying to do something about that misrepresentation of what a doctor really is and ought to be doing.
Well, Dr. Oz is a cardiovascular surgeon. Apparently, at one time he was a busy cardiovascular surgeon. And now he's giving advice about diet and giving advice about very little, but some about exercise and lifestyle. I'm not so sure that I would be qualified to say anything about what you do in the operating room, and I'm not so sure he's qualified to talk about some of those things either.
I don't think the television people care whether he's qualified or not. They care whether he attracts eyeballs so they can sell advertising.
Right, right. Is anything you think that we as a profession ought to be doing to try to, I wouldn't say combat this, but to provide some balance? For example, what this study showed is that only 0.4% of the presentations mentioned anything about conflict of interest. And we are so immersed right now in disclosure and conflict of interest, and this is not at all evident in any of the things that we see on television or people see on television.
Yeah, the journals generally follow the International Committee of Medical Journal Editors rules and do disclose conflicts of interest as best they can. Sometimes it falls through the crack and there are imperfections, but they really do try hard. Some of the better print media, generally the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, a few other places, LA Times, look for conflicts of interest and put those points right within the articles of those particular reports that they're making. Sometimes they don't. On television and radio, you almost never have disclosures of conflict of interest, number one, of the people who did the studies and reported them in the journals, where the journals do try to report them. That's fine. They don't talk about that generally. And number two, the conflicts of interest of the people who appear on television or on the radio, either as an interviewee or as an interviewer or a television personality or a newsreader, whatever. I have faulted that for 30, 40 years in very public channels, including with the public news media, because when I was at JAMA, we did a lot of stuff collegially with the public media people and tried our best to teach what we thought they should be doing to do that right. But the conflict of interest issue is a huge issue. Disclosure alone, frankly, doesn't solve the problem, but it's at least one approach to try to put people on guard about they should be wary about such and such because they have somebody talking about it may have $1 million stake in what they're talking about.
Are there any guidelines or rules that you've discussed or you know about how you present things? The journals use them or print media use them in any way?
Well, there are lots of rules for journals. The International Committee of Medical Journal Editors has rules which are quite stringent. Although they're voluntary and journals don't have to follow them, the leading journals generally do. For the public media, there's a Society for Professional Journalists who have rules to go by. In fact, the ICMG has its own rules for how the public media ought to work, but that doesn't mean people are going to follow it. But the professionalism aspects of what should the American Medical Association be doing about physicians who purport to be physicians and nonetheless might be Bourbon Street Barkers for whatever they're doing. Well, the AMA doesn't do anything about it because the only thing the AMA can do basically is if somebody's a member, they can discipline a member or they can throw them out of membership. But now, as you know, a minority of American physicians are members of the AMA, so there's limited recourse there. Then you get to the state medical association. Most physicians are members of their state medical association. They have ethics committees. Maybe they should do something about it if the person's a member there. If a person's a member of a hospital staff or of a university or something like that, there ought to be rules of professionalism and professional honest behavior that somebody ought to try to enforce. But as we all know, around the time that BMJ paper came out, the United States Senate had to have hearings to bring Dr. Oz for a public scolding by Senator McCaskill. It was embarrassing, I hope, to all physicians to have that have to happen. Why does the Senate of the United States do something that the medical profession ought to be doing if the individual professional doesn't do it, him or herself?
Do you think that had any impact on what he said or his colleagues say now, or it just didn't matter at all?
I think now there's a study for you. Somebody ought to take all those things that are in the can and do a systematic study in terms of the before and after the Senate hearing to see whether that, 50-60% or 30-50% error rate, as the BMJ came out with, got better or worse or had no effect. There's a study. Somebody right now who's watching this, if they hadn't thought about it, can do that. And that would be a really good follow-up study. It's not a control group. It's time limited, but it is a before and after, and see if it made a difference. I hope it did, but I don't know. I never watch it myself.
Do you have any thoughts about why our patients who are looking at this, or our families of our patients, trust what they hear seemingly so well?
Well, P.T. Barnum, he said there's a sucker born every minute, and that was then, and this is now. The kind of stuff, I mean, Steve Barrett has been running Quack Watch out of his place in North Carolina for a very long time, and he's been a friend of mine for 30 years, and he keeps working on it there. Gary Switzer, who runs Health News Review, a very wonderful site that reviews every week all the main medical news, so you can go online and get on Gary's listserv, or you get on his newsletter, and you can read whether he gave Nancy Snyderman 5 stars or a slap in the face about how she performed on the Today Show. Or you can read Names Are Names. You can read about the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, the Des Moines Register. You can read about CBS Radio and how they did in the medical news reporting that week on Health News Review. That's a great service that Gary's been doing for a long time. And I read that stuff every time it comes out. Unfortunately, the TV, that is the worst generally, although a lot of the other programs do very, very much better. WebMD, of course, the owner of the property that we're appearing on, generally gets pretty good grades, although sometimes it doesn't. Everyday Health and MedPage Today, the competition, generally get good grades. So there are people out there who know how to do this and are doing it right. But in the major media, not so much.
I would like to see, and maybe this is an unrealistic idea, that there be a page or 2 pages per issue which discusses what the public is hearing from TV or from the press, and how much of that's accurate, how much of that isn't, because patients are hearing it and they're not hearing the opposite. So I think doctors need to have some way to answer when a patient asks for something that's potentially harmful, to be able to say, well, you might have heard that on Dr. Oz's show or on The Doctors or on some other show, but it's really not right.
Well, the great thing about Medscape Medical News and MedPage Today Medical News is they are so timely that by the time reports out of the major journals are out there for the public media, generally it's possible for physicians to have already read about that. Now, that was one of the reasons we had an embargo that we had at JAMA, and other journals follow that as well. And generally, the news media do follow that, so that it's possible for there to be a lead time where the JAMA, the New England Journal, can get on the doctor's desk and be available for the doctor to read before the news media come out with stuff. That's one of the reasons, a legitimate reason, for embargoes to exist. So there are people and companies that are trying to help the doctors be able to have the questions the same day the patients may come in with that breaking medical news. But that's an entirely different question from the one of what Oz and Oz-type characters might come out with, which may not have any timelines at all, which may not have anything in the medical literature at all. So that's a lot harder for doctors to do. In terms of a post-hoc criticism column in the New England Journal, JAMA Internal Medicine, Annals of Internal Medicine, the big four there, the Lancet, the BMJ, and the UK, like a weekly column, I think what you're suggesting is that maybe the editors could assign somebody, in addition to like what JAMA does in his medical news section, has been doing that for many, many decades very well. But in addition to that, to have a one page on eye on the media or something like that, with a scoring system that's absolutely proper as a concept. It's absolutely within the capability of the large paid staffs of editors at least three or four of those journals. I think it's a great idea. I hope somebody actually picks up and then it does it. Good idea.
It sort of reminds me of what the FDA does with package inserts. You have a package insert for doctors and healthcare professionals and another one for patients that help them understand what the package insert's really saying. Maybe we could do something like that.
Well, yeah, something like that. The FDA does the best it can at educating the public in many ways. And if you pick up a prescription out of one of the main pharmacy chains, on that prescription is a whole bunch of information required by the FDA as helpful information for the patient who's going to use that particular prescription. But I'll bet the number of patients who actually read that information on that, which is in effect a package insert, in bigger print than the package insert used to be, I bet the number of patients who read that much is really relatively small. And frankly, so much of that cautionary information applies to 0.5% of the people, or 2% or something like that. So there's a place for editing of that kind of information to draw attention to the really big things, the big things that have a statistical likelihood of potentially hurting somebody down the road. But Henry, I don't think we should lose track of the fact that in us beaten down medical reporters, we in medicine also have a lot to learn, because the science itself is hard. Reporting the science is hard. Peer review is noble and necessary, but often faulty. And as the FDA business, there was this thing in JAMA Internal Medicine a week or two ago that demonstrated that the FDA gets information about studies and puts it in the coffers of their files on studies that are already in print or about to go to print, and never marry up the stuff from the FDA files with the articles that appear in print that ignore it. And there are a lot of things we can be doing a whole lot better in medical science, medical editing, and medical reporting.
Well, I agree, and I really want to thank you so much for your time and opinions about this. I know this has been a long interest of yours and of mine as well, and maybe we can make a difference somehow. Thanks very much, George.
Keep up the good work. I appreciate it.
Thank you.